Blog Talk Radio.
It's Smoke Signals, brought to you by IndiansBaseballInsider.com and hosted by Tony LaStoria and Jeff Ellis. They're talking Tribe.
Good evening, Tribe fans. Welcome to another edition of Smoke Signals. I'm your host, Tony LaStoria, along with my co-host, Jeff Ellis. Getting ready to talk some Tribe here on a Friday evening. It's not yet high school Friday night football, where I think we're 2 weeks away from that, so hopefully some people are still up and around and enjoying a one-hitter by the Indians. You know, again, as we talked about in recent episodes of this show, with this kind of starting pitching the Indians have, they always have a chance to win, and they're going to be a contender, annual contender, for the next several years, as long as they keep most of these starters intact and they stay healthy. So we probably won't get in much into that because we only have a half-hour show tonight. We kind of wanted to dive in, maybe talk a little bit of the outfield and have a couple of emails from some fans that wanted some things addressed. So without further ado, I'll bring in my co-host, Jeff Ellis. Jeff's going to be back for another issue, or another edition, excuse me. Hopefully, as I was telling you before the show, I've been having some internet connectivity issues over the last month. So hopefully I can stay on here. I don't get kicked off like I have. I think the last two shows, I think I've been kicked out at some point or another. So let's see if we can not make it three in a row. But Jeff, do you have any thoughts real quick on what maybe you saw tonight with the Indians?
Well, first off, I do hope you stay on as well, because I'm sure the listeners are tired of my ramblings to fill time. But, you know, I was just tweeting before the show went on. Right before that trade, you know, since I'm me and I sit back and do all this draft stuff, I'm actually, you know, putting together a top 10 list as we speak for the July edition. So when June of next year comes, everyone can laugh at me. It's really the only point. You know, I'm starting to look at things like draft order and everything else. And before the trade, they were seventh. The win tonight to pass the Padres and move out of the top 10 for the worst records in baseball, it's been a quick turn. They're about a game behind the White Sox. I mean, it's conceivable they could end up maybe not quite as well as they ended up last year, but somewhere around there. I mean, if the pitching staff and, I mean, I think the big thing we're seeing right now is what the year would have been like if Ramirez and Chisenhall had performed at the start of the year instead of being you know, kudos to them, but they were just outright disasters to start the year, and we're seeing just completely different players.
Yeah, it's out of the realm of possibility the team can finish with 80 wins. I mean, they're only, I think, 6 under after tonight. They've still got about, 40-some games left. So they're still very possible this team can finish with a winning record, which would be amazing, considering what you know, the inconsistency with the offense all year and a poor start and, you know, a couple of injuries. You know, I don't think they really had their optimal lineup out there very much all year. You know, obviously Michael Brantley's been dinged up all year. I don't think he's been 100% kind of playing through it. Kidness has been out now for, you know, a week or so. And Gomes was out there for a key stretch at the outset of the season. So, you know, if they find a way to finish with around 80 games, it's hard. I know with all the expectations going into the year, but it still gives some good thoughts going into next year with what they can potentially put together if they have a strong off season. You know, I know we talked a lot in the last episode. We talked a lot about the Swisher. Actually, no, we didn't, did we? The Swisher.
I don't
stuff
think we did.
Was
it was right after. Yeah.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, you are right. We didn't get into that. I think it was because I wrote that article. I think that kind of ties in with the whole outfield thing. So, I mean, we can kind of jump into that right now. You're right. We did not talk about that. I think we talked about it on Twitter a lot and even wrote about it. I mean, you got to like, I mean, there's some things to like, things not to like about it. Obviously, you know, to get rid of those two guys, they had to kind of take back a guy who didn't have a very good, you know, a good contract situation, not a highly productive player, kind of struggled the last couple of years, although he's off to a decent start, a good start with the Indians so far. But, you know, do you know, I mean, it's just a short, you know, week span. But you got to dislike the fact that they were able to clear the decks and get rid of two players that were making, you know, combined like $28-30 million next season. And more importantly, we're eating up two roster spots. And then beyond that, I mean, now you've got a guy like, you know, Chris Johnson. So he's essentially in some way, shape or form, kind of probably going to take the Rayburn role next year. So it's almost a 3-for-1 kind of thing. And that's how I look at it with this deal. I mean, in the end, the money kind of balances out over the next 2 years, how who gets what or this or that. But in the end, it just comes to freeing up roster spots. Cause I think we all agree that this team didn't have a lot of flexibility, you know, 3 weeks ago when they had the likes of Brandon Moss and David Murphy and Swisher and Bourne, all these contracts and these guys that were kind of locked in that were just like DH-only types. Now they've kind of changed that a little bit. Now they have a lot of flexibility with what they want to do. I mean, if they want to go get a first baseman, they can get a first baseman and make Carlos Santana a DH. I don't think they'll do that. But, you know, right field, third base, center field, they have some options of what they want to do. If they find the right player in a trade, or I don't see anything major happening on a free agent market. I think they've kind of been there, done that. I think what this does, though, this gives them the potential to go out there and find a guy of value in a trade that makes a decent chunk of coin but is not ridiculously overpaid and has like a 4 or 5 year contract attached to it, maybe like a 1 or 2 year deal back in, you know, last year or two of a deal of a guy maybe fits them. So what are your thoughts about the whole deal, and then we can kind of move on and talk about where they go from here?
With a headline grabber, the interesting thing is finally saw today that the official release is for all the people who want to scream that the Dolans are cheap, they sent $15 million in that deal. So the Indians, when it's all said and done, are probably going to save somewhere between $5 million, maybe $6 million. Now they're saving a little, but it's the minor part of the deal. Chris Johnson was an interesting guy because 3 years ago he had the second best batting average in the National League. Had a down year last year, and then this year was just in a horrible situation. He's always murdered left-handed pitching, though. And by getting him, he's going to play first or third. I think he's played one inning in the outfield before he came to the Indians, so that's not really where you want to put him. But he can hit left-handers, and I think he's playing so well because it's, you know, if anyone watched the game tonight, like there was the point where at first base he was mimicking Corey Kluber's windup. Like, he's just having fun. It's a completely new situation for him. And John Hart apparently called because he wanted Michael Bourne. He thought he'd be that was the target to begin with. And the Indians then agreed to give them $15 million to take Swisher, from what I read. But, it opens up, as you said, that's the most important thing. It opens up spots, and it kind of allows them to reset the deck. And, you know, Almonte is definitely playing over his head right now, but I'm going to enjoy it for the time being. Johnson fills that Rayburn role. Rayburn, I think his option is either 100,000 or 10,000. I think it's got to be 100,000, but his walk amount is nothing. So they can just, you know, it's $3 million to keep him or let him walk, and you clearly let him walk. And you just figure out a platoon. You know, if it is a Santana and him platoon, I wouldn't love that. But if you can figure out a situation where, you know, maybe he plays, him and Lonnie would be an ideal platoon, something like that, where, you figure out a way to make it work. But I'm pretty happy. It's a good situation for them. And they get a guy who's probably a more useful piece, and it kind of clears the deck.
Yeah, I mean, again, it's not a trade that is going to bring back anything of value right now. I think what it does, it just brings back potential. You know, they have room now where they can mix in some young guys. You know, they got some roster flexibility, and that's ultimately what it's all about. You know, this isn't a trade where they're clearing money and they're going to go out and spend $30 million. No, this is a trade where, like I said before, I can see them targeting somebody in free somebody in the trade market that's in the last year of a deal, potentially a walk year, and it, you know, they make a trade and get a guy because they kind of clear that money for next year. What would be interesting is if they're sending $15 million to the Braves, I'm curious if they're putting it on the books for this year. I mean, they may give the money to the Braves next year or whatever, but I wonder if they put it on the books for this year or if they put it in the books for next year as far as budget.
And then I know there's also some deferred money as well from what I remember hearing at one point. So, I mean, you know, it's not a lot, but
yeah.
At the same time, they are going to save, I think I saw about $5 to $6 million. And on top of that, the other big thing is, you know, even if they send $15 million next year, the fact is they're only playing Johnson about $7 million next year and then $10 million the year after instead of just that straight,
yeah,
like $16 million to Bourne. So it does give them a little more wiggle into next year as well.
Yeah.
They're not signing Chris Davis, obviously, but it gives them the ability to maybe look, you know, especially the way things are going, they can look at someone in the 10 to 12 range, maybe at a higher end on a 2-year deal.
Yeah, I think, you know, it just creates that roster flexibility. And, you know, they may eat the money this year, and it just frees up a little bit of money, you know, for the next couple of years. And like you said, I don't think this opens up the door for them to go out and make a 4-year, $50 million deal to like a Bourne and Swisher kind of deal. I see this more like along the lines of what the Royals have done, you know, a 2-year deal for, you know, $20 million, you know, those kind of deals, you know, something around as high as $12 million per year, but no longer than 2 years guaranteed. That's what I can see those kind of deals, you know, maybe a deal or two like that to plug in somewhere in the roster as far as like a lineup need. I think it's probably best that we kind of try to dig around and find a bat or two that kind of fits that mold. I don't know what's going to be out there yet. It's kind of early in the game to get into free agency, but the good thing is those two pieces are gone. It creates an opening in center field, and it creates a giant opening, you know, as far as DH goes, because Swisher, that's all he was going to be next year. And also, and I've kind of alluded to this several times this year, it gets them out of a potential messy situation next year where they would have had to potentially tweak their bats and this and that so they don't reach those, you know, those 600, I think it was 500 plate appearances was what they had to reach next year. And then automatically that $15 million vesting option for 2017 would have kicked in. So it kind of avoids all that messy stuff, and then any kind of outright release they may have done this off season or early on next season to get out of those messy things. Now it's kind of on the breeze to do what they want to do there. But you know, moving forward here and talking about the outfield now with those two guys out of the mix, it really does create a lot of different possibilities for the Indians. You know, now I would be very surprised if they go externally and get a center fielder that costs any money next year. I think at this point it's going to be Abraham Almonte, and then unless he falls flat in his face over the next 2 months, which so far he's looked like an all-star. It's crazy how well he's played.
He's got,
he's got the skill
set. He's got 7 extra base hits and 30 plate appearances compared to Michael Bourne. Michael Bourne had 13 extra base hits and 330 plate appearances. So he's halfway to Bourne and 300 less plate appearances.
Yeah, he's been almost as productive as Bourne has in his like 9 days or 8-9 days with the team. Not even that, I don't think. He has been almost as productive as Bourne was all year. It's crazy. Now, I mean, look, I'm not silly where I'm going to expect Almonte to continue at this rate. But, you know, maybe a change of scenery kind of thing gets him going because he's always had the, you know, potential to be a pretty solid player. And at this point, you got to look at him and, like, Tyler Holt as potential just short-term fill-ins in center field. I think the Indians will be happy with a guy that can run a little bit, play solid to above average defense in the outfield and hit in the bottom two spots in the order and pay that guy a league minimum. I think at this point that they would be more than happy to do that, considering that that's what they were getting from a guy before and born, where they were paying the guy $15 million a year or close to it. So, you know, Almonte's early start is intriguing. It's encouraging, especially when you consider his, you know, he's got some pedigree, and there is potential for a little bit more of a player there. I like the fact he switch hits. He's got a little bit of thunder in that bat, which we've seen. You know, interesting guy. I can see him, you know, worst case that he's a fourth outfielder for them for the foreseeable future, and kind of nudges out Tyler Hull out of that mix. Or he becomes your center fielder for the next year plus, until somebody from, you know, one of the prospects, because as we know, it's probably beyond shortstop. Center field might be their deepest position in the organization. You know, you got guys like Tyler Naquin, who will be ready at some point next year if they want to go that route. You've got Clint Frazier, who's probably 2+ years away. Then you got Bradley Zimmer. You know, somebody actually emailed us about him today, Walter, a fan of the show, actually was asking about Zimmer. If we think that there's any potential that he could start with the Indians next season or get to them rather quickly, I guess we can kind of jump into that. What do you look at as far as the center field situation next year? And then we can kind of touch on the whole Naquin, Zimmer, and whatever after that.
Okay. I think Almonte is, with the way he's playing, is kind of setting himself up, and reminds me similar to Jose Ramirez a year ago, where he's going to – the Indians are always looking to see sometimes it really annoys people how much they're looking to see if they can find bargains, but the Indians are always looking to see if they can find the next, you know, Yan Gomes. Now, I should state, before anyone gets excited about Almonte, Yan Gomes put up really big numbers in the minors, you know, was always productive, and Almonte has always been a little more hit or miss. So having said that, you know, he's still an interesting guy. But I think they'll give Almonte the chance. I think next up is Naquin, maybe Ramsey, though Ramsey's lack of production this year, I think, has really kind of affected him. I think he would have been up by now. But, I mean, he's had an okay year, but it almost feels like the Indians are a little soured on him for whatever reason. I think they'll give, Ramsey and Naquin will be the next two up if there's an issue. If anyone's been following my articles, I've been hitting at least one Akron game a week since Zimmer got called up, actually. And he's been an interesting guy to watch. And it was really hilarious about a week ago when I had people being like, he's only hitting .222 in AA. He's not a prospect. Just after 2 weeks, ready to jump off. And then what he's done over the last week to kind of, you know, it took him. What makes him really interesting, more so than anything else I've seen with him so far, is how quickly he then turned around and adapted AA. AA, typically, when you look at statistically, is outside of the transition to the majors, it's the hardest transition a minor league player will make. And to see how quickly he kind of readjusted, I think, is the should make people really excited. I don't think he's a break the camp kind of guy. I'm sure you can talk more on it, but I think he's one of those guys who, if the Indians are in contention next year, he could totally be an August or September call up as like a depth bat who, you know, or if someone gets hurt. I mean, it's not inconceivable that he could be, you know, somewhat reminiscent of the Struble Cabrera call up back in 2007. But his movement and the speed at which he's adapting, I think I've found very impressive. And just a hint, quick hit on Frazier, another guy whose adjustments over the past month have just been ridiculous. He's young for the level. He was young on draft day. He's kind of, from what I understand, he's kind of added a toe tap that's helping him out, or he's attributed to some of his. But if you go and look at his, there's plenty of stuff on the internet about what he's done in the last month. His last month, it's, the walks are up, the strikeouts are down, the power is up. So it's a fun time to be an Indians fan when you look at what guys are doing offensively. You wonder what's in the water with Lynchburg, even a Dorsey's Paulino, who we've all kind of left for dead. all of a sudden gets promoted to Lynchburg because they need someone, and he's played well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree with a lot of what you're saying there. I think, you know, if you look at this lineup and the options they had to fill in some of those holes, like I said, center field, right field, third base are probably the three positions that they're the most unsettled at right now going next year. You know, Brantley's in left field. You know, Lindor's at short. Kidman's at second. Santana probably at first base. I know there's people out there probably want to trade him. I think there's a small chance he gets traded, only for the fact is you're not going to find a much better bat for that cost. You're going to get back, you know, to find a guy to replace him, you're going to pay more money to. And then Yan Gomes obviously behind the plate. So I guess DH, but I think DH will be handled internally. They're going to have guys like Chisenhall and Johnson and those kind of guys on the roster. So I don't think they're worried about DH. So really it's three spots. If you look at third base, they look to be in a decent spot there with Urshela, potentially Chisenhall backing them up. You got Yandy Diaz, who probably can help out at some point next year if you need him. So I think that they're pretty satisfied there unless something falls in their laps in the offseason. I don't see anything going on there. And then, obviously, as we already talked about center field, I think they've got enough internal options there. I mean, I didn't mention Ramsey. He could be a potential option, too. But if you look at right field, they don't have anybody. That's probably where they're hurting is a corner outfield. And that's where I think they're going to look to go outside the organization, not only to fill that right field spot, but also fill it with somebody that can hit for power, drive in runs, because they don't have that kind of player in the system. And that's where I think that they're going to look to make their big acquisition is try to find themselves a right fielder that can go in there and, you know, hitting that four spot. You know, it's not going to be easy. I mean, it's easier said than done. Potentially, they may already have some inroads on those kind of on such a deal or whatever they're going to do. So that's where it's going to be fascinating in the off season to see what they do there. Because I think we all agree that they got to find that cleanup guy because they've got the guys that hit in front of that guy with Lindor and Brantley and Kipnis, and they've got some pretty solid guys that hit behind that guy with Santana and Gomes, and then the rest of the lineup after that. You know, they can match up 7, 8, 9, however you see fit. So that, I think, is what – I think it's an important spot is to just – that's going to be the external piece that they look for is to fill that right field spot. Now, as far as those questions with regard to, you know
– did we lose Tony there? I currently have my phone on. But if everyone will give me 1 second, I'm going to text Tony and see who lost who. I apologize. Well, I will continue my ramble just in case I am indeed the one on, which I believe I am. You know, just to go back to the situation with the outfield, it's one of those things where, as Tony said, right field's kind of your only place that's 100% kind of up in the air. I think everyone was hoping we would have seen Ramsey by now or that Naquin would stay healthy. At some point, you have to worry about him and health in general. But I think those guys will all get a shot. And then late next year, or we might even see Zimmer in 2017 on kind of the Lindor track. Nice thing is you can pretty much slot in anywhere, depending on what they would need. But it's definitely a situation they could look to address. I found myself looking online to see who the top free agents will be. Not really looking at the top, but maybe one step down. You know, it's a pretty deep class, but that's never going to really be where they're going to get much help. So the question becomes a year from now. Have they moved something? I think that's pretty much where they are. And, what can they move and who can they move? Relative to the value they're going to get back. It's all going to be about valuation.
And I'll say right now, I'd rather see a 1-for-1 than a 2-for-1 or a 3-for-1. If they're going to move one of those arms, I don't want to upgrade two positions. I want to upgrade one position with one guy who is the equivalent. Because right now, all three of those guys are in the top. You know, the Salazar, Carrasco, and Kluber are in the top 8 for xFIP in the American League. I think actually in all of baseball, they're in the top 8. So if you move one of those guys, you need to get an all-star potential guy back. That being said, I think if I were to try to move one, with the Indians, it's still probably Salazar because he's the one who isn't locked up. Like I said, in an ideal world, you find a team that wants to buy on Bauer, who's more of a mid-rotation guy, but is, you know, flashed at points this year. It's an enviable position. We'll see what they do. You know, as Tony stated, catcher's locked down. Third base is interesting because, you know, Urshela has been up or down. Defensively, he brings enough to stick. Yandy Diaz is another one of those guys who's been recently on a power tear. He's a little bit older Cuban guy, you know, kind of smaller name Cuban prospect, but has been highly impressive when I've been down in Akron. Really a guy to watch. Second base, you know, and that's going to be the other interesting thing. You know, Jose Ramirez has been so good defensively. Jason Kipnis was a plus defender this year before injury. How do you make it work? You know, Lindor is a short stay. Could one of those guys, you know, two plus defenders at second. In some respects, with the way this team's going, maybe the injury to Lindor is the, or to Lindor, to Kipnis is the best thing possible, because all Ramirez is doing is showing people he can handle second base as a plus defender. And he's getting out of it. Oh, are you back?
Yeah, kind of. I'm on my cell phone, but it's going to probably be a little choppy. But go ahead.
Okay. No, I was just talking about the other trade value as I was still in time. So go ahead and get back to what you were speaking about.
I have no idea where I left off. All I know is all of a sudden I got the little dial tone. But, yeah, you know, and, you know, just in summary, I just think that, you know, Zimmer, I don't know if you heard, I mean, I was talking about Zimmer, that he has no shot to start the year with the team, and it's a roster control thing with that. That, you know, I look at him to be on that Lindor timeline where he comes up around, you know, middle, early part of June next year once he's, you know, cleared of the whole roster thing. You know, Super 2 is not a huge thing, but that's also something where it gives him a couple months to kind of get him in Double A and kind of get his, you know, settled, and maybe a week or two in Triple A and kind of join the team and go from there. So, yeah, he's going to move fast as long as he keeps performing and developing like he has. And, you know, he could potentially be an option in right field, but I think they're going to look for somebody else that's more proven, because they need that middle of the order bat, and that's what they're going to try to figure out, is how they get that bat this offseason. So, I mean, did you have any final thoughts on the outfield, how you see it, kind of taking shape as the offseason, I know we're 2 months from the offseason, but how do you see this outfield coming together as we go into next season?
No, I agree. I think, you know, what I'll be interested to see is how much time Chisenhall gets out there, and if when Kipnis is healthy, if Ramirez starts seeing a little more time out there, because as they try to find places to get these bats in the lineup. So that's, I think that to me will be the most interesting play with the rest of the year in the outfield, is seeing if they try some of these young kids in positions out there.
Yeah, I agree. All right, well, hey, 30 minutes to go. Definitely leave you with not a lot of time to get on to see what these guys kind of touch on the outfield stuff pretty well. Next week, we will kind of, you know, dive into some of the infield positions and try to see what the team's going to go from here. Who knows? Maybe the team keeps playing like they have and they can't roll, and they'll be maybe they have a second wild card spot. I think it's probably 6 or 7 months ago. It can happen. But until then, I'll be back again on Friday night, and we'll talk to you.